Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to another episode of Fathers of the Grind. My name is Tim Nestor. I'm here with my friend, colleague, sometimes enemy, Derek Teague.
Yes. Good to be here.
Snobby Derek, all right.
Yeah, just finished beating Dark Souls 3 in 35 seconds.
Wow, that's impressive, Snobby Derek. That's something. Whoa.
Not bad. I've done better, but whatever.
Yeah. And you built your own PS4, right, from scratch?
Correct. I don't buy anything in a store. I think that's pathetic.
I didn't think so. I mean, that would be it's beneath you, obviously. Yeah.
Pathetic.
Now, you're pretty snobby, but nowhere near as bad as Snobby Tim.
Yeah, so. Snobby Tim's a piece of crap as well.
All right, well, welcome to the show. If you're brand new to the show, you're probably very confused. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Sometimes, apparently, I talk about how I play games on normal or hard, and it comes out super snobby, and I go into super, like, Kelsey Grammer, Fraser mode. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, anyway, well, thank you guys for hanging with us. I know we're recording a little bit late this week, but we'll get it up as soon as we can. And what we want to do...
That is what she said. Go ahead.
That was a softball. That was a slow pitch. That was a slow pitch softball. If you didn't hit that one, I was going to be embarrassed for you. So what we're going to do is we're going to cover old consoles. We're going to talk about the fifth generation of consoles. This is when it really picked up for me, at least, and I'm thinking for you too. So
yeah.
we're going to cover this fifth generation. It's probably one of my favorite generations of all time. But before we do that, I want to ask you some questions about your kids and gaming. So we've talked before about what games they like to play now. We've talked about what games you guys play together and also about mature games, things like that. But we haven't talked about when you first introduced video gaming to your kids. How did you approach that? Did you go, hey, here are the old classics that dad played. You're going to experience this first. Or did you just kind of say, you know what? You want to play Minecraft as your first game? Go for it. Like, how did you approach that? Did your kids play old games and old consoles?
Not really. I just kind of, when I was introducing the kids into gaming, it was more just trying to figure out what type of games they would like. So we've talked in the past that my kids like sports games, so that was kind of an obvious pick. But the big thing is finding games that I think they would like, plus are they accessible for them? Not all sports games are accessible. That's why I do look for easy mode in a lot of games. Like we talked, I think, last week about Ratchet and Clank and how Eli's been playing it. I think if I put it on normal or anything like that, it might be a struggle or an annoyance to him, but putting it on easy, he can just run around and do whatever he wants. So it's looking for that type of stuff. But yeah, I generally just started with games that have recently released. I didn't really go back to, well, this is what daddy played or anything like that.
I gotcha. All right. So you let them kind of let their interests guide what games you brought to them to play.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, my kids play a lot of soccer, so FIFA was a natural, you know, that type of stuff. Rocket League looked like the type of game that would be simple for them. And so as soon as I showed them, they were like, this game's cool. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's how I did it. So we played modern consoles. I've never busted out the old Super Nintendo N64. You know, we never went to a pawn shop to pull out old consoles or anything like that. But we did revisit the classics via the Wii Virtual Console. So when my son got old enough to have the coordination to hold a controller and see the screen and figure out what he was controlling, I already had a good number of Virtual Console games built up on the Wii. And so we started going through some of the classics there. Like, I think the first game he really played and got into was Super Mario World, which we've talked about at length, is my personal pick for best Mario game ever. But the thing is, one of the reasons I think it's so great is I think it holds up well. It controls really great, and the colors and all that, the visuals still look great. So he liked that one a lot, even though it was very hard. He kind of just wanted to do that Yoshi level over and over, like those early levels, but that's where he was introduced to it. But I did not go back and say, all right, buddy, here's Punch-Out. Here's the original Mario on the NES. Now let's play Zelda. Part of me wishes that I did, because now he's got so much experience with modern games. He doesn't have a healthy taste for the 8-bit or 16-bit generation of games, really. The closest thing to it would be the Pokemon games, which definitely have that old school, at least Super Nintendo, kind of Earthbound vibe to them visually. That's the closest thing he'll get to that old school type of game, or the side-scrolling Marios will play those. So I was kind of in the middle. I had him play some old stuff. They do have a Game Boy Advance, like one of those SP versions that has Super Mario World, and I think it's got Super Mario 2. I think the old school one where you pick up the vegetables and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's got a few of those classics, but their attention wasn't really held. They didn't really get hooked until games like Pokemon, games like Nintendogs, of course, all the side-scrolling Marios, and then Plants vs. Zombies is huge in our family. So yeah, that I tried to some extent, but then I realized, what's the point in forcing them to play through these old games when games have come such a long way since then? So I can appreciate the history of it. I don't know. I'm kind of torn as to whether or not my kids really need to play the old games.
I don't think it's a need. I think it's, you know, like, I bought... I don't even think I bought it. I think it came with my 3DS when I bought the original 3DS. I paid so much money for it. Nintendo gave me a bunch of free digital games.
That's right. I've got those, the ambassador titles, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and I could be wrong, one of them was like the original Super Mario Bros. Or Mario Bros.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So my kids would play that. Like, they would be like, oh, well, it's on my 3DS already, so let me check it out. You know, and you, every once in a while you share like stuff like, I wanted my kids to get into Zelda, because I like Zelda. But I do find that Zelda games are a little too complicated. But I at least wanted them, when I would get in an open area, to just kind of check it out. Like, those are the type of games that I want, or I'm kind of, it's almost like same thing with sports. Like, I'm real excited when my kids get a little bit older. Not that I want them to grow up real fast, but just to be more competitive with me. I want there to be a day when Ian can beat me at basketball or soccer or something like that. Same thing with video games. Like, I can't wait for the day when I can buy like a new JRPG and be like, yeah, Eli can play this with me, you know?
That's true.
Because he understands it. Like, it's all going to start making sense to him now. He's smart enough to grasp it. So those are the type of things, the experiences that I'm looking forward to. But right now, I'm pretty much... kind of the way I live my life, keep it simple, stupid. Just let the kids play what's simple, what grabs their attention now, and then when they get older, they'll get into the more difficult games. I mean, my daughter Emily, she's 12, and I know Minecraft's supposed to be like a simple game, but I'll be honest, as a hardcore gamer, whatever I am, I can't follow what she's doing. Like, I'm like, what? I don't understand the point. Like, all you guys do is just build, but how do you build? And where are you getting all these things? You know, so, you know, not that I ask all those questions, but when I do watch her, she's obviously figured this all out on her own. Because I've never...
And that's not a modern-looking game. I mean, that's a pretty...
That's a very retro, old-school-looking game. And it plays like a retro, old-school game. And
interesting.
She's probably put 200-300 hours into that game.
Did you guys try Terraria, by the way? You just reminded me of that game. I've never really tried it. Did you ever get that one?
I bought it on the PS3 super cheap because I knew she liked Minecraft, so I wanted to give her a shot at that, and she showed no interest.
Didn't get into it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like she knew it was a ripoff.
Yeah. I gotcha. All right, well, I think I like the idea of kids appreciating where games came from. So I think maybe as they get older, I think I could probably, as weird as this sounds, I might be able to convince them as middle school or high schoolers to go back and try some of these old games with me. But for right now, I'm with you. Like, whatever they're having fun with, whatever, if it's sports, let's do that. If it's a puzzle game, play that. You know, that's fine. So I'm not too much of a purist when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I know that some people are. But yeah. I'm curious to hear from the community too. What do you guys do? So when you guys, those of you who have kids, those of you who plan to have kids someday, will you have them sit down and go through the Atari, NES, SNES era in order? Or will you just kind of let them play what they want? Will you pick out your favorites? Like, for example, I do have the DS copy of Chrono Trigger. At some point, I will hand that to my son and say, you're welcome. And I'll let him try that one out for a little while.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that he'll like it because I still think it holds up. So we'll see. You know, whenever he gets to that phase, if he ever gets to that phase where he's interested in, you know, a JRPG, then that's one that I'll let him try. But that being said, it's a hobby. You know, there's no point, in my opinion, in forcing it on them. Even if they didn't like games, that's fine. But since my kids do happen to like games, I think that interest in the classics will come up. That being said, I've played through, like, Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, and I think I've described this before. They'll all gather behind me and watch that. I've handed it over a few times to them to play, but like you said, it's a little bit complicated. So they prefer just to watch it. But they do have an interest in those games that that are definitely dated a little bit. So speaking of old consoles and old games, let's talk about this fifth generation of consoles. So before we get to this generation, give me a rundown. Do you remember what consoles did you own before we get to this generation? Which, by the way, includes things like the Sega Saturn, N64, the PlayStation 1.
Like, which ones did I own from the fifth generation?
Or, no, before this. So, leading up to this fifth generation, which consoles had you already owned or at least played a lot before this point?
Well, I know I own the Super Nintendo and a regular Nintendo Entertainment System. I don't know if I bought a Genesis later or if it was my friend. I had access to a Genesis. I just don't remember if I bought it when I was younger or bought it later. But I do know for sure my neighbor had a Genesis. So, I basically counted as I had a Genesis.
Okay. Okay, but most of you're mostly Nintendo boy, like me, up to this point.
And what was the console before the Genesis from Sega? Was it just
the Master System?
Yeah, whatever that one was before, my neighbor had that too. Like, he was the Sega guy, I was the Nintendo guy. And we hung out, like, every day, so I would get to play all those consoles from Sega, and he would get to play all the Nintendo ones.
Nice. Kind of like game sharing.
Pretty much. Different.
Well, I only owned the Super Nintendo and the Game Boy. Everything else was, you know, borrowed or went to someone else's house. I guess you could count the Atari 2600, but we had long since stopped playing that, even before we got a Super Nintendo. So that had already been retired years before. But anyway, that leads up to this next generation of hardware. Now, my brother and I got Nintendo Power, but that was really the extent of our knowledge of the gaming world, other than going to a store and seeing what was for sale there. If a friend of ours didn't have it, or if we didn't see it in a store and get a chance to try it, we didn't know about it. So all we knew was Nintendo, because that's the only magazine that we had. We didn't have access to internet. We didn't know anything else other than Nintendo. It's got a new system coming out. So in June, let's see, was it June? No, it was September. September of 1996, the N64 dropped for $199.99. And I remember my brother and I, he didn't want to go in on it this time, but he wanted to play it. I remember I bought it. That was my first system. I didn't share it with anybody. I saved up, and I bought that thing. So that was my first purchase from this generation. What about you? What did you buy first in the fifth generation?
The first one I got was the PlayStation on launch day.
Really?
Yeah, my mom, she pre-ordered it for me. Which, it's weird, because back then you think, well, what? They didn't pre-order, but they did. It was a little mom-and-pop game shop, and we went in there, and she ordered the console. She gave me a choice, like, what do you want? Of course, I didn't know anything about this. It's just kind of like my gaming magazines were constantly giving the PlayStation press, so I was like, oh, I guess I want the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I went in there and we pre-ordered it, and of course it didn't come out until later, September 9th, 1995. My birthday is August 17th, so she paid for it then, but I got it a little bit later after my birthday. But yeah,
what games did you get at launch? Do you remember what games you had right out of the gate? It might be hard to remember that.
I think I only had one game, and it was Ridge Racer.
Ridge Racer!
Yeah, I love that game. I remember us setting that up on my cousin Daniel, the guy that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
on his monitor.
Daniel, but in air quotes, Daniel, sure.
We hooked it up on his monitor, and we played Ridge Racer a lot.
All right, so we each are representing one of the consoles at launch. So you, a year ahead of when the Nintendo 64 came out, you grabbed the PS1. Did you ever own a Sega Saturn, Atari Jaguar, or 3DO, some of the other major systems?
No, I didn't own the 3DO, Jaguar, or Saturn. I did want the Saturn.
Yeah.
Bad.
There were some cool games for it, I remember. Some cool RPGs in particular.
Yeah, but that, I think that was the one. You know, you gotta remember, this is back when, you know, I was relying on my parents. Mm-hmm. So that one came out in North America May of 95. Okay, so right. Yeah, it came out not around my birthday, and it came out at $100 more. And back then... Yeah. It even says, this is pretty cool. Like, the page I'm looking at, it says, okay, US $399.99. That's right. What it came out at, 99 cents. Yeah,
That was pricey compared. I mean, okay, so for reference, the N64 in 96 launched at $200.
Mm-hmm.
The PS1 in 95, a year earlier, launched at $300. And the Saturn, earlier in 95, had a 4-month head start on the PS1. It launched at $400.
$400, but here's the crazy thing. It's the equivalent of $621 in 2015.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you an idea why my mom said, nope. You know, even the PlayStation, the equivalent is $466 for 2015. Right. So these were very expensive back then because obviously people didn't make as much money. Things were, you know, just not the way they are right now. But I really wanted a Saturn. Unfortunately, I never got one for my mom. And then by the time I could, like, afford to buy my own consoles, the Saturn was already dead. So it wasn't something I was going to ever go back and buy.
Right. Yeah, well, for this generation, the one that got out of the gate first was the Atari Jaguar. And I remember that was big news. Actually, 3DO might have come before that. But 3DO was weird. It was kind of like an early version of a Steam machine where you had multiple manufacturers making the same a different box to play the same games.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little weird. You had multiple manufacturers making it, and I think that was part of what doomed it. It was so expensive. It looks like it launched, if this is correct, at $699.99. So $700 for at least the base unit. And of course, today, like Derek said, adjusted for inflation, that's $1,150. Even without inflation, $700 is ridiculous for a console. So that launched in October of 93 and failed miserably. The Atari Jaguar, I remember reading about this one. I just said that we were shut out from anything non-Nintendo, but I do remember hearing about this because back in the day, we all were talking about bits. How many bits does that one have?
Is it
16-bit? Is it 32-bit? Whoa, Atari just made a 64-bit machine called the Jaguar, and it sounded so awesome. And I never got to see one in person. It wasn't until years later that I finally saw what the games looked like. Those were ugly games. Like, I don't know that there were any good-looking Jaguar games out there. So the bit count was clearly not the only thing in play with the internal workings of that system. But that was the last, I think, that was the last attempt by Atari to get a console system out there. And it failed miserably. It was a cartridge-based system. They added a CD-ROM via an add-on, but it was too late. They were trying to catch up with what the PlayStation was doing. So the Jaguar failed, the 3DO failed, the Saturn fared a little bit better, but it didn't quite hit the same numbers as some of the others. I think I put the sales numbers down here too, somewhere. Yeah. Let's talk about the sales numbers just real quick. 3DO, there's no sales numbers listed because of the different manufacturers. So the numbers are really inconsistent, but working my way up from the bottom here from this list, we've got the Apple Bandai Pippin. No idea what that is. That sold 42,000 units. The FM Towns Marty, I think someone made this list up. They sold 45,000 units. The PC FX sold less than 100,000 units. And now here we get to ones that I actually recognize. The Amiga CD32 sold 100,000 units. The Atari Jaguar sold 250,000 units.
That's
so
terrible.
Respectable at first when you look at the others, but when you consider what the others, what Sega, Nintendo, and PlayStation sold, it's nothing. The Sega Saturn sold 9.26 million units. And of course, we would call that a failure, but in terms of like a massive manufacturer, in terms of what Sega should be doing. But it is kind of respectable when you consider the competition. The Nintendo 64 sold 32.93 million units as of about 10 years ago. And the PlayStation 1, the original PS1, sold 102.49 million, or at least it shipped that many.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that number is staggering. And Sony came out of the gate with that first system and just killed it. And so
and really came down to their library. I mean,
yeah,
they came out and they had something to offer, where 3DO, I mean, they list, the cool thing about this is they list the best-selling game on each console.
Right.
Gex was the best-selling game on the 3DO, and it sold over 1 million. That is terrible. Your highest-selling game is over 1 million. And
well, I mean,
it.
that's good numbers, but not for your best-selling game. Like, that's a decent...
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
back then, if you got a million, I remember this. Like, if you got a million in sales, you were like a platinum game. Like, that was a huge selling game. Yep. Now we laugh if you make only a million.
Well, which is why it's funny that the Atari Jaguar best-selling game just says unknown, because I have no idea. I mean, if you're listening to this and you owned an Atari Jaguar and you can think of some of your favorite games, I legitimately want to hear about it. Like, I want to hear a positive, exciting, nostalgic Atari Jaguar story. I've never heard one before. I'd love to hear an actual, oh, I loved my Jaguar story. Never heard of it before. So I'd love to hear that if any of you ever had one and liked it. Or had one and hated it. I want to hear that too. Speaking of best-selling games, the Sega Saturn's best-selling game was Virtua Fighter 2. Sold 1.7 million in Japan. I don't know if that just means Japan. Maybe it never came to the States, but that was their best-selling game. Okay, so let's get to the real discussion here. It's really all about the PlayStation 1 versus the Nintendo 64. We already know the PS1 completely dominated sales. That's not really a discussion. We know it out. Sony came in with a bang and outsold Nintendo's successor to the Super Nintendo, the very successful Super Nintendo, and Sony took over big time. And I think a big part of that, you just said the games that they made. I think a big part of that is because developers now and publishers could put these games out on these CD-ROMs that were astronomically cheaper than making cartridges. Because I remember hearing stories about Nintendo's cartridges. You need to basically buy them from Nintendo, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah.
It was a proprietary cartridge that you had to get from them. And so you had to spend a ton of money to make these games. And oftentimes they would make it worth your while in one way or another. But for the most part, they were like, okay, we could either very cheaply reproduce these games through CD-ROM on this console that's outselling 3-to-1 Nintendo, or we could pay extra to have it on the cartridge system. So it not really a difficult choice if you're a third-party developer, I don't think. So go ahead. Let's hear it. Let me hear your thoughts about the PS1 versus the N64. Which one did you like better back then? And has that changed over time? So just give me some thoughts on this battle, this Sony versus Nintendo, the first round.
All right, so this is a tough one because I own the PlayStation, and I had a good friend that I'm still friends with who owned the N64. So every weekend I would go to his house, and I would bring my PlayStation over. He would have his N64 hooked up. And
oh, we those would were the days.
Yeah, I mean, this was the coolest setup, too. I mean, he had one of those big screen TVs. So it was huge. We had the whole house to ourselves. Parents were never around. Junk food, video gaming, whatever we wanted all the time. So, so as far as the catalog, I remember, and I'm just going based off of like memories of games, I liked my PlayStation. I wouldn't say I was in love with it because I wasn't, you gotta remember, and I've said this in the past, I wasn't a big RPG fan, and a lot of good RPGs came out on that system.
All the good RPGs came out on that system, yeah.
Yeah, like I bought Final Fantasy VII, but I never played it. You know, I played like 30 seconds and I was like, this is trash. But the games that I liked were like Resident Evil. Obviously I liked the Ridge Racer. Gran Turismo, I bought that. You know, some big games that I bought, but most of my memories, like if you say, in this generation, what were your best memories? It's on the N64. It was playing Mario Kart 64. It was playing Mario 64. It was playing all the Nintendo first-party games, Donkey Kong, all those games with my friends. Now, the best memories I probably had on the PlayStation were playing, I want to say it's College Game Day. I think it was College Game Day.
Yeah, College Game Day. That's right. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I used to play that.
I feel like there was a Michigan cover of that, the one I had. Was there a Michigan cover?
I had a Charles Woodson one.
I feel like that's the one I played too. Okay, but yeah, that rings a bell. College Game Day rings a bell, yep.
Yeah, so me and my friend would play that all the time. Some of the big games we played, like, obsessively would be College Game Day. We played not NBA Jam, but it was like, what was that game? NBA, it was like a ripoff of NBA Jam.
Was it Showtime?
Yeah, NBA Showtime. I think that was
on N64, right? I loved that game.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what we would do is we would create characters, and we would, here's what we did.
They had giant heads, right?
Yes. We created all these crazy characters, and our favorite band was 311. So we named all the characters after the musicians in 311. So we would have, like, Peanut and S.A., and we would just get on these teams, and we would play with the 311 members.
Oh, such a music nerd. Ugh.
Yes. And some of our best memories were, like, the announcer saying, like, baseline wiener. And it's him saying, he was saying it was a baseline leaner, but every time it sounded like he was saying, baseline wiener.
Was it just because of the real pixelated audio? Like, it just wasn't very refined audio?
Yeah, it didn't
sound right. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, like I said, my best memories, I loved my PlayStation. I loved owning it. Obviously didn't regret getting it. But my best memories probably were on the N64.
What about now, looking back? Would you still hold that opinion that the N64, looking back at it now, was the better system? Or is it just for you personally, you had more fun playing it?
It's just that I had more fun. I wouldn't say it was the better system. I think Sony, I mean, obviously, looking back, Sony was the smartest one. Like we talked about, Nintendo made a huge mistake. They were trying to, basically, they were trying to force people to make cartridges, but like you said, based off their own company producing them, and that's what pushed a lot of people to Sony.
Right.
Now, there were other consoles that came out, and we talked about them, that had CD-ROMs, but like I said, the key to being successful in, we'll talk about this as we get into Microsoft as well later down the road. Not tonight, but, you know, down the road when we do other podcasts, if I don't fire you.
It's always a fear. It's always a worry.
Is supporting your console with a good library. And the Sega Saturn, in my opinion, didn't do that in the beginning. It was this huge, high-priced console, but when I remember looking through all the games, I'm just talking about launch, you know, there might have been some gems after that. There was nothing that I was like, I've got to play this. Like, Panzer Dragon Saga, didn't care about that. You know, I didn't want to play that. Whereas when Sega Dreamcast came out, and again, we'll talk about this down the road, different story. It had a library I cared about. So, Sony did that. You know, they released this $300, which I think that was pretty affordable. Still expensive for back then, but pretty affordable for what they were offering, and they backed it with a great library. And that's the thing that I've respected about Sony from the very beginning. And this is coming from a guy, when Microsoft came upon the scene, I've always been a Microsoft guy. But I've always respected Sony, I've always bought their products, because they really support their products with games that you can only get on their system. They give you a reason to own them. And so that's what they did with the PlayStation. So I would say, long answer, but I'm saying PlayStation was the better console. Hands down. It was far and above the better console when it came to library. I think technically it was more sound and better. And the N64, while it had some gems on it and some great games, it's kind of, you know, the problem Nintendo's had for many, many generations, and that's, you bought that system for a few special games that they release, and then there's really nothing else that they offer.
And I just looked up the launch titles as you were talking. It reminded me of what made Sony and Nintendo so different, even as early as 95, 96. This is 20 years ago, okay? We're now at the 20th anniversary, getting close to 20th anniversary of the Nintendo 64 coming out. So that's kind of weird to think about. We're old. But think about these. Let me read these launch titles to you. So in 1995, here for the U.S. launch, here's what launched with the PS1. Battle Arena Toshinden, ESPN Extreme Games, Kiliak the DNA Imperative, NBA Jam Tournament Edition, Power Serve 3D Tennis, The Raiden Project, Rayman, Ridge Racer, Street Fighter the Movie, and Total Eclipse Turbo. Now, I'm not saying those are all amazing games. Some of them I remember being pretty fun, like Rayman. I did like Ridge Racer. I did like NBA Jam. But that's beside the point.
Toshita was good, too.
You had a wide variety of games right out of the gate with this brand new disc-based system in 1995. Keep in mind that the last major release, if you don't count things like the Jaguar and the Saturn, if you're just thinking Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, this PlayStation 1 came out of nowhere. The Sony PlayStation came out of nowhere and was a hit. And then a year later, in September of 96, the Nintendo 64 launched with Pilot Wing 64 and Super Mario 64. Mm-hmm. Those were your options out of the gate. Now, I do realize Nintendo supported that system, especially with first party, incredibly well. It has some of the best party games and multiplayer games of any system ever. It really does.
It really does.
But think about that launch lineup. Even though it's $200 cheaper, it was clear right out of the gate there's going to be a limited list of games available for this system. It was just very clear right out of the gate. So that gave, I think, Sony the leg up before the fight even started. They already had a wider variety of games going. Now, that being said, think about the 3D platformers, though. Like I mentioned Mario 64. Give me a Super Mario 64 over 20 of PlayStation's best attempts at a action-adventure platformer. Like, I didn't think any, like, Crash, Spyro, all of their attempts at those kind of games never did it for me. Super Mario 64 set the standard for what an adventure platformer should be, and it was amazing. I loved it. Still to this day, I really enjoy Super Mario 64. It's an amazing game. So, I don't know. Sometimes it's quality over quantity, but in this case, you and I are completely the opposite. I owned an N64. I was a Nintendo boy. And it wasn't until I started experiencing the depth of some of the PS1 games that I was missing out on. I remember going to my friend's, his dad ran a gas station, and in the back break room of this gas station, he had set up this little room with this ice chest full of sodas, and he had this little old CRT TV, and it had an old Sega and a PlayStation hooked up to it. We would play Joe Montana football on the Sega, and then we would fire up the PlayStation, and we would all watch my friend play these crazy, weird Japanese role-playing games. I had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then I remember when he played Suikoden for the first time, and I just was amazed by it. There was a story, there were characters, it looked really deep, it was a long game, and that sold me on getting that system. And you just mentioned that you weren't a big JRPG fan. Well, I certainly was. And that won me over to that system. So in the end, looking back at it now, I do think the PlayStation 1 was the better system in terms of library, of course. I think the library was better. But I also think that what they did, what Sony did, was just a smarter play than Nintendo. They made their games easier to make, more accessible for developers. They introduced memory cards, which Nintendo tried to catch up on later, but the PlayStation 1 introduced memory cards where now you could rent a game, save it, and then return the game, rent it again later, and your save's still there on your memory card. You didn't have to worry about, you know, keeping track of that cartridge where your save is. Little things like that we take for granted today, that's what Sony was introducing to the mass market with this system. So I absolutely loved it. I do remember playing some sports games on there, but not liking them that much. I still preferred the arcadey games like NBA Showtime, NFL Blitz on the N64, because that was your multiplayer goodness. You know, Mario Golf, Mario Tennis. I preferred that when it came to sports. GoldenEye set the standard for first-person shooters. PlayStation didn't have what I considered to be a great first-person shooter. They had a few... Do you remember they had this on-rails arcade game? I think it was Die Hard. I think it was like the Die Hard trilogy game. It's really, really awful. But that was, you know, those kind of games are the only things that PlayStation had to answer for the N64 shooters that were just amazing. Between GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. I mean, Turok. The Turok games were great. At least back then they were great. So, my opinion, if I had to make a pick, I would say that Sony's PlayStation was the better system of that generation. I do have probably just as many fond memories of both for exactly what you mentioned. I was the one who brought my N64 to my buddy's house. I had four controllers, and I had the system. I had all the games. He had the PlayStation 1, and he had all the deep single-player games. And then same thing, you know, junk food, up all night, just really, really healthy decisions. And and so, yeah, same experience with my buddy. His name is Mark.
I kind of want to go back to that lifetime.
I know. There are times. There are times. But, yeah, so that's my pick. Even looking back on it now, I think the PlayStation 1 games in general, a lot of them hold up better than a lot of the N64 games because of the way they went with 3D and the polygons. I think the older art style of a lot of the PS1 games holds up better in some cases. For example, you've got things like I keep mentioning, Suikoden, I think holds up pretty well. I think games like Chrono Cross, Final Fantasy IX, I think some of these games hold up remarkably well. Wild Arms. And then you look at N64, and with the exception of their first party games, think of a game like if you ever played Quest 64. I mentioned a couple other random ones that you gave me a hard time about, like Hybrid Heaven. Some of these games do not hold up visually at all. And I'm not sure why that was. The N64 had more horsepower behind it than the PS1 did. But for some reason, the games just didn't always come together like you expected them to. Let me ask you this: if you had to give me your top, let's say top three games for each system, which would you pick? Just off the top of your head, you didn't prepare for this at all. What are your top three games from both systems? All
right, for the N64, gotta go with Mario Kart 64, NBA Showtime. I know I'm going to forget something. I'm just going to say Mario 64, Super Mario 64, but I really don't know if there's something. There's got to be another gem on there that I'm forgetting.
Okay.
For the PlayStation, gosh.
Well, you think about that for a minute since I put you on the spot. Let me think of my 64 ones while you're thinking of your PS1 games. I would definitely put Mario 64 at the top of mine. Even though it's not necessarily my favorite genre of games, I just think it's one of the best games of any system. So I'll put that one up there. I'll pick, here's my deep cut. Here's Snobby Tim for a second. Ogre Battle 64. Did you ever play that game? It's an awesome strategy RPG. It was one of
hardcore for me.
It was one of the very few RPG games that Nintendo bothered to put out in their system. It was actually a really good one. It's on the Virtual Console, if any of you are interested. Really cool cartoony art style that contradicts what I said earlier. It actually does hold up well today. That Ogre Battle 64. And then I'm gonna have to kind of copy yours. I'll have to go with Mario Kart 64. It's probably still to this day the best version of Mario Kart, just at least in terms of what it did new. It took the Super Nintendo Mario Kart and it took it to a brand new level. It was amazing. Some of my funnest moments, just staying up for hours, kind of like Rocket League does to us today. Just staying up for hours playing the same thing over and over, just running another Grand Prix, another race, another battle, just over and over again. Absolutely a blast. What about PS1? Can you think of any games on that side?
Resident Evil. I mean, you could probably list all the Resident Evils off for some of my favorite games, but definitely the original Resident Evil. I played, let's see, I had one on top of my... like waiting for you to get done talking, I had the name in my head. Thanks a lot, Tim.
All right, so Resident Evil is one of yours. I'll give one of mine. I'm going to have to go with Metal Gear Solid. Give that game some love. That was one of my favorite games. Still is one of my favorite games.
I watched my friend play that, and I was like, it's funny because he was using my console, and I'm like, I didn't buy the game, so I don't know how he got it. Because he wasn't really a gamer at all. Like, he was the friend that I would bring my consoles over.
And he's the one who played that game?
Yeah, and he would be the one that normally fell asleep at, like, 8 o'clock while we all partied.
That's awesome.
Because he just wasn't a big-time gamer. But he loved Metal Gear. Yeah,
it's amazing.
But I think, for me, I would have to say number two would be... it could be College Game Day. I put a lot of hours into those.
Okay.
I just can't really think of anything else. It was just crazy because I had a whole library. The PlayStation's when I really started buying games for myself.
Right.
Like, I got, or renting a lot of them. Like, I remember we rented Resident Evil 2. We beat it, like, in one night. So I'll say Resident Evil 2.
Okay. I'll go with, so I picked Metal Gear Solid. I'll also go with one I mentioned probably too many times, but it's Suikoden 2. It's the best of a series that I love. And then, let me think outside the box here a little bit. There's a lot of JRPGs that I could go through, the Final Fantasies and the Chrono Cross, but I think I'm going to go with... I think I'll go with Final Fantasy Tactics. It was one of those early grid-based strategy games that I finally tried out, and I learned to love that turn-based RPG-style game. So I liked Final Fantasy Tactics. I think it holds up, too. So, man, I mean, just listening to the games that you listed off and thinking through the list for myself, this fifth generation was a remarkable time to be a gamer, especially a young gamer like us, as we're discovering what games could actually be. I mean, just some of the games we've listed, and I know we've missed a ton. There's people who are probably screaming things like Castlevania and whatever else we missed. I'm sure we missed a ton. But the point is not to think of all the best games for the system. It was more of a way for us to think back on which ones do we like best back then and which ones do we think are better now. For me, back then, I ended up enjoying the PlayStation 1 more, and I think now, looking back, I still think it's the better system. And it sounds like Derek enjoyed his time with the N64 back in the day more, but I don't know.
I actually think the PlayStation is the better system, but I think I enjoyed my sessions of playing games with my buddies on the N64 more.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. Real quick, before we wrap things up with this one, I don't know if you had any handheld systems back then, but did you get a chance to see? I included in the notes.
I have to cut you off real quick. Fox 64. Dude, I played multiplayer matches in that game. Okay. That was another one that I played with, like, Mario Kart 64. Like, those are the two games that we would get four of us, and we would just play all night. But okay.
Is that the one that had that arena style dogfighting you could do, kind of Independence Day style? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I have so many memories. We put 311 Transistor on. That's why I love 311. We had them on all the time. 311 Transistor album on, and then all four of us would just sit there in this one little room, sweating our balls off, playing Star Fox 64.
Yeah. Yep. Star Fox was a good one. And really, any of those games that had 64 on the end brings back good memories. All of them had 64 on the end. Nintendo liked to do that. They like to
Ogre 64.
Ogre Battle 64. Okay, let's talk about handheld games. Let me just read off some of these handheld systems that were out back in the day during this fifth generation. We had the Genesis Nomad. It was released in 95. It was the Sega follow-up to the Game Gear it was supposed to be. But for those of you who are familiar with it, you know that it basically was just a portable Sega Genesis, which is cool in theory, but apparently not great in execution. And it had zero exclusive titles to the portable system. It was all just portable Genesis games. There was a system called the R-Zone, I don't know anything about. There was the Virtual Boy, Nintendo's horrible failed experiment, kind of leaning into the VR territory. It did not work out well. Game Boy Pocket, which was their improved form factor for the original Game Boy. Game.com, don't know anything about that. Game Boy Light, Game Boy Color, Neo Geo Pocket, and Neo Geo Pocket Color, and then the Wonder Swan, or Wonder Swan Color. Did you own any of these systems during this fifth generation, these handhelds?
No, I didn't care about handhelds.
All right, I'll just
I still don't really, actually.
Quick comment. I played the Game Boy Color, and it was really cool to finally see some of my favorite Game Boy games brought to life a little bit with a color palette. Even the old Game Boy games, they would add this little very simple, I forget how many colors, maybe 7 or 8 colors or something, but something like Link's Awakening looked pretty great on the Game Boy Color. So pretty cool system, but we won't really dig into that right now. My only experience with Virtual Boy, my brother and I rented it, and it gave us both massive headaches. It was all the red lines. Did you ever see a Virtual Boy? Did you ever play any of those games?
Never did. It was one of those where, like, by the time I could probably afford it on my own, it was considered trash. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, think of something to the effect of, like, Tron, with all these red laser lines, like, in this grid, and that's what it looked like. It was a pain, a literal pain in my head to play. The concept was kind of cool, but it wore off very quickly, and we were very eager to return that thing to Blockbuster, so... Yeah, so anyway, so there you go, you guys. Fifth generation of consoles, both home consoles and, well, handhelds, not much of a discussion there. Nintendo was still ruling the world. This is before mobile phones became a big deal, so I'm sure we'll get into that with the future discussion on these generations of games. So, Derek, I know we're recording kind of late for this week, and we want to make sure this episode gets out to everybody. Did you want to issue any kind of public apology at this time for everyone for being a little late this week? I mean, feel free, just speak from the heart.
Yeah, I mean, it broke me. Like, yesterday I was thinking about how we hadn't released the show, and so I just laid in bed and I cried the entire time.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song, if you'd like me to sing it.
Yeah, let's go ahead and hear it. Here's Derek Teague, and his song is called...
Look, I'm not going to tell you the name. Just let me sing it, okay? Let me get my feels going right now.
Oh, all right.
All I wanted to do was release a podcast to you. That's all I wanted to do. But Tim let me down because he's a piece of crap. That's kind of where I was going with that.
That's good. You know what? It's not good. I can't. What am I saying? It's not good. All right. Next episode, we'll get to hear the chorus of that ballad.
That was the chorus.
Oh. Nice hook.
That was actually like the verse / chorus bridge.
All right. It's getting painful now. Guys, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Doo, doo, doo.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
Your fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things here.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?